Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jonathan Van Ness, or JVN, is an advocate, an author, and a prolific podcaster. He became the friend you didn't know you needed when Netflix rebooted Queer Eye, and as the show's grooming expert, he spreads the gospel of gorgeous self-care. Or you may listen to his award-winning podcast, Getting Curious, featuring thoughtful conversations on a wide range of topics from history to politics. Or you might follow his lively Instagram, where you can catch him practicing figure skating and broadcasting a homemade production of Cat TV featuring his four beloved cats, or starting his day with a coffee dance. Back in September, we got deep with Jonathan when he was our guest discussing his now New York Times bestselling memoir, Over the Top, A Raw Journey to Self-Love. Now he is back with a second book, and while it's for kids, its message is still deeply meaningful. It's called Peanut Goes for the Gold, and it's about a gender non-binary guinea pig who aspires to be a rhythmic gymnast. It is a joyful exploration of identity and what it means to do things your own way. Jonathan Van Ness joins me today. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to All of It.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
So, you know, after writing your memoir and as you were on book tour, what did you find that people really connected with in your book?
Really just so much that we are all beautifully worthy of love and that we all experience things that, you know, are really difficult for us and that we don't really know how we're going to come through. But somehow, you know, there's a way for us to be able to do that. And I really felt, I think the most feedback that I had is I felt so much, you know, less alone. I felt really just so seen and loved by, you know, so many people.
As you were having to talk about this, some things that were very personal over and over again, and you were thinking about what had happened and how you wanted to put this out in the world to help other people, what did you wind up learning about yourself that maybe you didn't realize?
So good question. I think I learned how far I've come. The process of, you know, writing the book and having to relive so much of what I've been through over and over again and being comfortable enough to talk about it on such big stages, that would have just not been anything I would have been, you know, mentally or emotionally capable of doing. And I've worked so hard over the years to, you know, process everything. And so I think, you know, now that I've had a little bit of time to look back on that time, I think it just, I think I feel, you know, proud of myself and grateful that it's helping people.
My guest is Jonathan Van Ness. He has a new book called Peanut Goes for the Gold. When did you get the idea to write a kid's book?
It actually happened when I was writing my book, because writing my book was, writing Over the Top was so, parts of it were really fun, but it was also, you know, pretty overwhelming at times. And I think it got to a point where I was like, you know what? There's just not enough figure skating or gymnastics in the morning that is, you know, becoming the lime sorbet, if you will, like the palate cleanser to the experience of writing this book. And so I was like, I was thinking about my inner child so much writing Over the Top that I was like, what's something that I wish would have been in the world when I was little? And something like this just, you know, jumped to mind. And, you know, when I was editing my book and writing my book, it was so fun to, you know, decide on, you know, do I do batons for the guinea pig or do I do a ribbon stick? Do we do a red heel or a teal heel? Like, it was just, it was a fun kind of distraction and like fun thing to work on while I was working on something that felt so serious.
So were you writing this while you were writing the memoir?
Kind of like the more of the editing, the last half of my memoir.
So how did you get started? Did you have this story sort of percolating for a long time? Did you have to really sit down and think, what's the story I want to tell? Because writing children's books, it's more challenging than people think.
It the concept and really writing it kind of tumbled out of my brain. I really did have a childhood guinea pig. I actually had six, and much like, you know, cats are my, you know, current, you know, household animal obsession, guinea pigs really had my heart from like 1996 to 2002 or something. It was my fifth grade teacher that really turned me on to guinea pigs, and I just love them. I still do. And so when I was thinking about, you know, what would childhood JVN really want to write about, it's like guinea pigs. And to this day, like when I talk to like people that I went to elementary school with, like I so often hear about, like, do you remember how you just like would walk into the classroom talking about guinea pigs? Like first thing I like my oldest is Peanut, so I very much love guinea pigs. And really, I think the biggest issue or like problem that I had around writing the book, not to be a spoiler, but spoiler alert, it was at the end, you know, when Peanut goes to the Junior National Gymnastics Championship, Peanut has a accidentally trips on their shoelace and has to improvise like a kind of more of an ice skating move at the rhythmic gymnastics competition. And at first, the feedback was, oh, like this tumble caused them to get zeros from the judges, but it was, you know, kind of the effort and the, you know, the turning the best of a bad situation. And I was like, after I kind of had that concept, I was like, you know what? Kids go through enough these days. They don't need to get like Peanut's winning. Like, no, like that actually, that figure skating move on the rhythmic gymnastics mat actually gets, you know, this would need to be in a later series, but actually gets named after Peanut. It's called the Peanut, and they win because I just think that kids go through enough. And I also was the receiver of many a participation trophy growing up. And I just felt like Peanut needed a win. Like, I just wanted Peanut to win really bad. So, you know, maybe that really wouldn't have happened in a real rhythmic gymnastics competition, but I feel like the world's hard and we should all just let Peanut win this one.
My guess is Jonathan Van Ness. The name of his book is Peanut Goes for the Gold. And if people were listening carefully, you use the pronoun they and their and them. Did you always know you were going to make Peanut non-binary?
I didn't at first. And then as I was writing and editing and writing, I was like, this just feels like such a, because, you know, my experience of identifying as non-binary, you know, happened for me much later. And it was really something that I didn't know existed until I was in my 30s. And it is just such a beautiful reality, and it's such a beautiful concept. And it's a concept that when we look, you know, through history, we see the concept of being non-binary or, you know, gender fluid, like for thousands and thousands of years in different levels of celebration or, you know, not celebration in different cultures. But it's just so beautiful to be non-binary. And it so perfectly describes how I've always felt. It's just something I didn't know was available and for me. And I wanted to, you know, when speaking about what would have really helped child JVN, it's like I wanted to create something that families and parents and children mm-hmm. could talk about that was, you know, joyful and lighthearted and really seeing, you know, a young non-binary person being celebrated for who they are and being supported for who they are. And, you know, that is not the case for so many young gender nonconforming children and for so many young trans children. But I wanted to create, you know, a universe where, like, you know, Peanut's world, Peanut is so celebrated and is really seen and validated. And, you know, you see in the book that their whole family is helping with the routine from costume design to, you know, music concepts. So which is something that I also had, you know, for myself growing up. Like my brothers rather resistfully participated in one carpet figure skating Olympic competition, you know, family Olympic competition. I only got one out of my brothers, but still. So that was where the inspiration from that scene comes from.
I'm wondering if you could share, and you touched on it, but I want to flesh it out a little bit. A decision you made in the writing process that would help facilitate conversation about gender identity with parents, between parents and children.
Yes. Will you repeat the beginning?
I said, what was a decision that you made, like as you were writing the book, maybe it's a turn of phrase or an illustration you knew you wanted to have so that you could help facilitate a conversation between parents and children about gender identity?
Well, when we first started conceptualizing Peanut's outfits, very naturally, Peanut was always in capes and heels. Peanut and I both have great taste, and so does Jillian, the illustrator of the book. So really lots of flair for Peanut's outfits. And then as I was writing, you know, because Peanut is inspired from my childhood guinea pig, who was a male guinea pig. And so I was just writing, you know, he and him at the beginning. Hmm. And then as I was, you know, seeing everything take shape, I was like, this just doesn't feel right. I feel like this Peanut, this rhythmic gymnastics obsessed Peanut, is they, them. Just because my childhood guinea pig was a boy doesn't mean that this Peanut is. And so I was like, I think this is like such a great opportunity. I just saw an opportunity to have a gentle conversation just by use of changing Peanut's pronouns. And I thought, what a great, you know, time and place to have that conversation about what non-binary means.
My guest is Jonathan Van Ness. The name of his new kids' book is Peanut Goes for the Gold. And a portion of the proceeds from this book, it's going towards No Kid Hungry This Month. How do you envision this book being a resource during this crisis and even beyond?
Well, now I think definitely No Kid Hungry is an incredible organization that is so many kids in America rely on school for a source of their nutrition. And that's something that, you know, we are not having now. So I think, you know, as far as now goes, I'm so happy to be able to contribute to what they're doing. So for the short term, that is what that's doing. And I think if you're someone who is able to, you know, afford ordering a book online, I definitely would say, like, yes, thank you so much for, you know, your support. And also, you know, if you are able to do it like from local bookstores, even better, because so many local bookstores are doing curbside pickup and delivery, believe it or not. So I would say that, and really just thank you. But I think long term, I hope that Peanut Goes for the Gold is a resource for young queer people, and, you know, for young queer children and for their families to be able to have, and actually even for allies, for everyone, it's really just for everyone to have an example of what, even though it's a family that's made up of guinea pigs, what, you know, a loving, supportive family can look like. And, you know, I think about so many children's books that I loved growing up, and I just think that this children's book is a really great resource for joy and celebration of embracing who you are and embracing your differences in a way that, you know, really repels shame in ways that are just so subtle and don't, it's not a scary conversation. It's just, you know, this is long-winded, so you can tell me to stop if it's too long, but I talk about an over the top a lot about, you know, my experiences with wanting to, you know, wear evening gowns growing up, and just, I was so playful with gender and how I wanted to express myself. And that was really such a source of so much, you know, pain for me growing up, because that was so that was seen as so scary and so threatening in my family. And, it you know, now everything is fine and my family's very supportive and et cetera, et cetera. But growing up, it was a really big problem. And, I wanted to create something for parents alike that shows that it is just, you know, it's just gender nonconformativity is beautiful. And it's also, it is a big deal, but it's also only a big deal because people make it a big deal. It's actually so normal and so beautiful for everyone to experience gender in different ways. And it's okay. And so I wanted to show that in a really fun rhythmic gymnastics guinea pig sort of way.
My guest is Jonathan Van Ness. We'll have more with Jonathan after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Jonathan Van Ness. So, Jonathan, while I have you for just a couple more minutes, we wanted to tap into your expertise. You know, some people have decided during this time to maybe not shave, maybe go the sweatpants route. Then there's some people who just kind of want to try to keep it together. So what advice? I've heard so many people say, I want to cut my hair, but I'm a little frightened to. Or I want to cut my partner's hair. I don't know where to start. How do you start cutting your partner's hair if you've never done it before? Just two or three things to keep in mind.
Start small. Okay. Yes, so start small. And I would also say YouTube and Instagram are really great resources. There are so many incredible artists, stylists who have lended their voice and their expertise to, you know, tutorials to help you not mess your hair up too bad. So I would say investigate that. Like, you know, read the directions. Like, so find the directions. Try to, and also really just don't bite off more than you can chew. It took me every day of a decade, and like mm-hmm. I talk about it, not to keep talking about my memoir, but like I mean, I cried myself to sleep like so many nights, being like, I'm never going to learn how to cut hair the way I want to. It is really a science. It is an art. It is difficult. And also, you know, we at the salon, like in my shear case, I have 6 sets of scissors and 2 different mm-hmm. razors. And they all do different things, and they all create different details to the hair. And also maybe lower your expectations. Because, like, as my mom always says, under-promise and over-deliver.
Excellent advice.
So, oh, you know, and then the last thing I swear, so sorry. Just don't bleach and tone. Just don't bleach and tone. Like, unless your hair is, like, you know, a centimeter long, like, under half an inch, like, extremely short, do not bleach and tone your hair. Do not bleach every hair on your head. You will regret it. It's extremely expensive fix, or it really doesn't look cute, unless you really get lucky the first time. But maintenance is a nightmare, even for, like, professional colorists. Like, please don't bleach and tone. Unless you just don't care about length, and you're going to keep it, like I said, so short. But, like, oh, my gosh, please. My lips to God's ears, to your heart, to convince you don't do it. Like, you'll thank me later. OMG.
That is good advice. Sometimes the best advice is telling somebody what not to do than telling them what to do.
I agree.
So, this is a little bit of a pivot question, but I know you'll have a thoughtful answer for it. You know, there's been this sort of point of contention during the shutdown where some people in certain parts of the country want things to open up. And you hear a lot about people saying they want to go get their hair cut. They want to go to their salon. So I'm not asking about the politics of that. I'm curious your thoughts on why these rituals are so important to people. Why making a visit to your salon, to your colorist, to the guy who gives you the great shave. What's it about, that relationship and that ritual?
It's that feeling. We know when we feel better about how we look, when we like how we look, we do feel better. And I think that is, you know, warrants a larger conversation for, you know, why do we like the way we look, you know, with brighter hair or the perfect mm-hmm. shave, or, you know, there's a larger question in there. But we are conditioned to feel better when we look better. And you know, but looking better is arbitrary. So I think that is and also it's like we have a long-standing relationship with our clients. I mean, there are people whose hair I did for over a decade, and you know, every 3-6 weeks, I mean, that's a lot of time to spend with someone and to grow with someone and to, you know, life lived with people, and you do develop such close friendships. So I think it's part social, and it's also, you know, we do feel better when we look better. So I think that is, you know, the why. But I will say, like, not politically, it's like, is it, I'm so, how are we going to, for hairdressers and mm-hmm. manicurists and estheticians and massage therapists, it's like, how do we, I think there's just so much more to learn mm-hmm. about the virus to protect, to protect ourselves and also people that are still working. It's like, is it face masks? Is it, you know, is it goggles? Or obviously it's face masks, but it's like, is it eye coverings? And mm-hmm. like, we really need to figure out how to protect the people that are going to be performing these services before we do them. But it's also just such a dire situation because you think about if your way of making a living is sure. all of a sudden like not safe, like literally not safe. It's a gigantic conversation, and I know you said that in the politics, and I accidentally veered myself there anyway. I can't help
it. That's okay. It's kind of hard not to these days.
But we know we feel better when we look better. So that's all of that. And I guess my other little to pivot back to what the question was is that just don't do so much that like when we do figure out how to be able to do everyone's hair again, that you really messed yourself up. It takes so long and to fix it. And everyone's going to be trying to get in to get their color done. And if you have some crazy corrective color that they got to figure out how to like weave in to the rest of their day, I'm just telling you, it's a whole thing. So just, I know it's the one thing you can control right now, and I know that it seems like a good idea, but actually, as this person who taught me when I was their assistant at the salon I used to work at, it's one of my favorite quotes, just because you Amera can does not mean you Amera should. So you can take that with what you will.
Perfect words to end on. Wise words from Jonathan Van Ness and his mentor. Jonathan, the name of his book is Peanut Goes for the Gold. Jonathan Van Ness, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much for making time for us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.